You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love
you.
Imagine.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
It's hard to believe the drama is over.
I see you haven't lost your touch.
You mean like sort of on?
I guess I love you.
It's hard to believe the drama is
you
over.
Lost your touch.
Well, that's all the scripted stuff.
Hi, I'm Robert Valentine. Welcome to the final edition of Pop Journalism, a show that takes a different look at media and pop culture. Yes, our 8-episode summer run has finally come to an end. Nothing but repeats until another program fills our place. It's been fun, but you know, it's not over yet. This week we take a look at the best of pop journalism, our funniest moments and best interviews, plus some stuff you haven't heard before. Like, this week, we have a brand new interview with Australian pop star Alex Lloyd. He's touring with Beth Orton and is performing live on Monday with her at the Phoenix Concert Theatre in downtown Toronto. We'll talk to him and give away copies of both his and Beth's latest albums. They're both fantastic albums, very highly recommended. And all you have to do is just call in during the show to win at 416-595-1655. They're stockpiled here. Everything must go. And, of course, we have our usual mix of music and spoken word. I guess this is the last time I'll get to do this intro and throw it to the music. We'll be right back.
On my way up north, up on the venture, I pulled back the hood and I was talking to you and I knew then it would be a lifelong thing, but I didn't know that we could break a silver lining and I'm too sick like a good boom and I can pull this with a bit about us. He said you'd take it as long as I could. I could not erase it. And I'm so sick like a good boom that can pull this deep a sort of fairy tale.
Good boom, I can pull this.
chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say, this town don't look good in the snow. You don't care, I know. Venture a highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know.
Just the sound of Stephanie, one particularly ill-fated auditioner vying to become an American Idol. American Idol is a new TV reality show concept imported from Britain, now airing in North America on Fox and Global. The concept is pretty straightforward. Singers and dancers audition in hopes of becoming a solo pop star complete with a recording contract. A panel of three music industry professionals judges the performers and whittles down the list to one. One of those judges is even a former pop star herself, Paula Abdul.
Wow, Paula.
Well, you are very, very outgoing and you woke us up, that's for sure.
Good morning.
I personally don't feel that you're the next American Idol.
And Paula's the nice one. Along the way, more embarrassingly awful singers get their dreams crushed by the other two blunt judges making up the panel.
When you entered this competition, did you really believe that you could become, you're standing on now, the American Idol?
Yes, sir.
Well, then you're deaf.
But while the American Idol concept is new to North American television, the internet has its own version. On Yahoo, they operate a voice chat system. and one of the chat rooms is for karaoke. We here at Pop Journalism eavesdropped, and it's just as brutal as any American Idol competition or Hollywood audition.
Please stop. You're really crap.
And I wish on a star that somewhere you are. You'll never find a star around you. You gotta go find your shining star.
Sorry, you're just plain to see that you're the only one for me for.
Sing like my dog.
So that's the internet competition for you. But what about Stephanie? Well, Stephanie just wouldn't take no for an answer and went back to the judges.
I don't know if I made it or not because they didn't say come to Hollywood.
Hello?
Do you have a twin?
I was just curious if I did make it, if I'm coming to Hollywood, because I think I have what it takes.
We said no.
We said no.
But why? Wait,
because you're not good enough.
Because you're not good enough. You're not a good singer at all.
Oh, hell no. See, the thing is, I'm right here, because I'm the whole package right here. I got the look, I got the style, and I'm the next Tina Marie or the Stephanie Sugarman right here. Let me tell you.
Good loving body, rockin' knockin' boots all night long. Making love with you.
Well, I guess she's auditioning all over.
Stephanie. Okay. Stephanie.
It's okay.
Listen, honey. Okay. Auditions... You either get it or you don't. And you honey, you go on to the next audition.
I will.
See you later,
Stephanie. You
won't be coming to Hollywood. See you later.
I will be coming to Hollywood and I'll see you and my millions are
going to
be there.
It's almost time. The G8 Summit is about to take place in Kananaskis, Alberta. Next week from June 26th to 27th, leaders of the world's wealthiest nations will gather for an informal meeting to discuss the world's problems. The leaders of the G8 are from France, Germany, the US, the United Kingdom, Japan, Italy, Russia, and of course, Canada. On with the story. For the past 28 years, the leaders of the world's most powerful nations have been gathering together once a year. But for the past few years, anti-globalization protests have been marked with increasing violence and charges of police brutality. The most infamous of these events occurred during last year's G8 in Genoa, Italy. During that summit, a protester was shot dead by police, and more than 231 people were injured in 2 days of violence. Most of the 280 people arrested at the event were freed, but damage from the violence was estimated at over $45 million. This year, in the shadow of the events of September 11th, security has been stepped up. It's estimated that the Canadian government is going to spend $500 million on G8-related security. Maude Barlow of the Council of Canada broke the cost down in an Ottawa news conference earlier this week.
Here they will seal themselves inside a military fortress that is going to cost the Canadian taxpayers $16 million an hour.
Federal Justice Minister Martin Cochon responded to criticism that Canada's G8 security preparations are too costly.
I do believe that we have to proceed on a case-by-case basis, and it's always a question of balance approach.
Yes, $500 million worth of balance. But the money's going to be spent regardless of protests and the whining of pundits. So stand up, Canada. Face the inevitable. Be proud. We're the hosts of the G8 Summit. Domestic diva Martha Stewart faced more than her usual share of media scrutiny this week. Stewart was featured on the cover of Newsweek because of accusations of insider trading. It's perfect for the media. After the economic scandals of Enron and WorldCom, a celebrity like Stewart puts a famous face corporate corruption. And who is more equally loved and hated than Stewart?
You don't want to skimp on the linen.
But the perfect image of Stewart was up for dissemination as she made her regular appearance on CBS's The Early Show on Tuesday. In a moment worthy of parody on Saturday Night Live, Stewart tried to duck host Jane Clayson's interrogation by focusing on preparing her salad.
Good friend Martha Stewart has been in the headlines lately, fighting allegations of insider stock trading.
Hi, well, we're going to make salad.
It wasn't Stewart's best PR moment, and eventually she did have to turn away briefly from chopping cabbage to respond.
I think this will all be resolved in the very near future, and I will be exonerated. I know that any ridiculousness.
Strangely, the Stewart scandal brought out some more venom from the usually excellent reporter, Adrienne Arsenault. Here are some clips from her report for CBC's The National.
Nice try, but Martha Stewart, domestic goddess, can't hide behind her cabbage this time. She, of all things perfect, a woman who built a business empire on the image of the superhuman homemaker. Not so fast. By the way, the head of the investigating committee,
Louisiana Congressman Billy Chosen,
is a Martha Stewart regular.
It's rich food, this Louisiana
Cajun food. Is
delicious.
Robot,
not the gumbo,
spicy,
the story. Americans who already consider Martha mocking a sport seem to really enjoy going after her now. Adrienne Arsenault, CBC News, Washington.
The irony is thicker than that congressman's Louisiana gumbo. If you thought Toronto's rental market was tough, you haven't lived in Hong Kong. Rental properties owned by the Hong Kong Housing Authority are seeking 3,000 people to live in their apartments. The problem is not high rent, but the fact that the apartments are believed to be haunted. Gruesome murders and suicides have taken place in some of the apartments. The apartments are also close to trash dump sites and have common bathrooms and kitchens. Property prices in Hong Kong are among the most expensive in the world. Nevertheless, about 10,000 applicants are expected to vie for the haunted suites. The media odd couple of the week has to be The National's Peter Mansbridge interviewing U2's Bono.
He's known simply as Bono, short in name, long in reputation.
I think Peter knows something we don't hear.
In the world of music, no band is bigger than U2.
Of course, Bono was there for more serious issues. He spoke about Africa and AIDS.
You know, on a recent poll of evangelical churches, only 6% said they wanted to do something about AIDS. I mean, it is unbelievable. The leprosy of our time, if you like.
At the end of the interview, a promise was made for Bono to return to CBC to talk about the same issues again next year.
Bono, it's been good of you to talk to us, and we will talk to you a year from now. Thank you.
Okay.
Bono. Short in name, long in reputation.
Thanks, Peter. Bye.
Toronto can soon start to breathe easier as the city's civil workers' strike is now over. The provincial government intervened in the ongoing dispute between the city and their workers' unions because negotiations were going nowhere. All this affected major city services like garbage pickup, swimming pools, and kids' camps. You could tell Ontario Premier Ernie Eves was ecstatic to get the strike settled when he delivered his speech to the legislature.
I think the important thing now, Mr. Speaker, is to get those people who are employees of the City of Toronto, all 25,000 of them, back to work as quickly as possible so that we can make sure that the city is not only cleaned up, but that there are all these services that should be available to the citizens of Toronto and its visitors as quickly as possible so that we can prevent any potential health hazard from occurring and people can get back to their normal lives. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Liberal opposition, The Liberal opposition also chimed in with the Premier's comments, though expressed some regret that the strike was not able to be resolved on its own.
I'm glad that very soon children will be able to go to daycare and to swim in cities' wading pools and to participate in summer camps. But I'm angry that it had to come to this, Speaker.
Either way, the garbage is going to be gone by next week. The Osbournes are coming to Canadian network television in the fall with all their cursing intact. MTV viewers in the U.S. and its Canadian sister station on digital cable currently broadcast the show bleeping out the famously dysfunctional family's foul language. The Osbournes will air Tuesdays at 10 p.m. with strongly worded advisories throughout each episode. We can't f***ing wait. Winnipeg is known as Canada's mosquito capital. It's a tradition to feverishly slap on the bug repellent in the city before stepping outdoors, where unprotected skin can receive up to 3 mosquito bites per minute. But news that the bugs are now carrying the potentially deadly West Nile virus is shaking the city. An infected crow that died in downtown Winnipeg was found to test positive for the mosquito-borne virus. Manitoba's medical officer of health made this thorough announcement in a press conference.
We were notified of a presumptive positive bird for West Nile virus in the city of Winnipeg, and we thought we would relay this information.
But we've had the West Nile virus present in Ontario for a while now. It crossed over from the New York area. 2 years ago, a 75-year-old Toronto man died after contracting the virus in New York. But so far, no one has died from contracting West Nile in Canada. So don't get too worried and lock yourself indoors. Less than 1% of mosquitoes carry the virus, and it usually only presents a danger to the elderly or those with weakened immune systems. A Winnipeg-based representative with Health Canada told the CBC the exact same thing.
It's not a situation where we should be overly concerned, but people should take protective measures. I mean, coming from Winnipeg, you mean you have to take protective measures just to exist outside.
Pope John Paul II is in the city of Toronto. He's here as part of World Youth Day, the Catholic Church's festival of faith for the young. Hundreds of thousands of youth are in Toronto, setting the stage for an enormous Sunday morning mass by the Pope. Though the forecast calls for rain today, youth are camped out with tents and sleeping bags in Downsview Park, where it's estimated a crowd of over 500,000 will converge. While the theme of World Youth Day is religious in nature, there's no doubt what attracted the huge crowds was the Pope. He's a religious superstar, and he has groupies.
It's going to be like an explosion in a while. When it comes, you know, this will just erupt.
John Paul II, we love you!
When the Pope made his speech, the crowds fell silent, and the Pope seemed to draw strength from the youthful energy around him.
You have come to Toronto from every continent to celebrate the World Youth Day.
World Youth Day seemed to have went by without a hitch, except outside the main events, where Catholics protesting the World Youth Day event handed out condoms to the visitors. The police stepped in, at the request of the Catholic Church, and removed the condom-toting Catholics off the property. Here's what a spokesperson for the World Youth Day had to say about that event.
There's a certain protocol of behavior that we have asked to take place, and we reserve the right, we have wonderful cooperation with the police of all the levels, that condoms are very inappropriate to hand out to young pilgrims.
There was little room for Catholic or World Youth Day dissent. One lawyer spoke to the CBC and said that the police officers in that incident stepped over the line.
They don't have a duty to enforce a moral code that the church likes. They have a duty to enforce the law, and this is beyond their duty and beyond their powers. I think it's an absolute abuse.
Whatever the case, there's little doubt that World Youth Day was a success for the Catholic Church. As the Pope Mobile rolls out of Toronto, many Catholics were left touched and starstruck by the pontiff's appearance.
John Paul II, we love you! John Paul II, we love you!
And finally, a quick update on NSYNC singer Lance Bass's attempt, or Bass, I don't know how to say his name, to venture into space. He has been confirmed by Russian authorities as the second civilian to venture into space. He's granted permission to accompany cosmonauts on the trip to the International Space Station. He must also gain approval from Canadian and European space agencies and NASA before taking his place on the launch. Regardless what happens, everyone here at Pop Journalism can't wait to have the NSYNC singer off the planet.
Pop Journalism.
Constance is on way.
That Week in Review segment brought back a lot of memories. And now it's time for new stuff. I spoke with Alex Lloyd this week. He's an Australian pop star whose new album, called Watching Angels Mend, is out now. It's a moody mix of acoustic pop and electronica. He's performing with Beth Orton at the Phoenix Concert Theater on Monday. The album was produced by Magnus Fiennes, who is the brother of actor Ralph Fiennes. We talked about Alex's expectations for the record and North American success.
I actually listened to Black the Sun, your first album.
Yep.
I noticed Black the Sun, it was full of electronic effects and all sorts of... It was almost a bombardment of sound, but this is really stripped down.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to move away from that a little bit. Like, the first record, I guess, was essentially a bedroom record. But I did a lot with my sampler and my Atari in my bedroom, like a lot of pre-production and stuff before I went into the studio. And then this record, I really wanted to use like big studio rooms and stuff like that. And I guess when you start to use more air and stuff like that, you don't need to use as many. I mean, I like to do something different every time, you know. So I guess it's probably more about just trying to do something different.
Now, you're a huge success in Australia. What are your expectations for North America?
I'm pretty stoked just to be doing some shows. I mean, I'm doing this tour with Beth Orton, but I'm just doing it acoustically, so I would like to come back eventually with the full band and do it properly. I'm just seeing this, like, the whole place for the first time, so, I'm looking forward to it.
So you've never been to this side of the ocean?
I've done a lot of time in, like, L.A. and New York, but that's about it. Yeah, I haven't had a chance to come up to Canada or to see, you know, lots of different parts of America. So it's all quite a bit eye-opening at the moment.
This album is, I don't know if it's just my impression, but it seems really, it feels sort of like your isolation, like it's about being somewhere else.
Yeah, I guess there's a sense of traveling. I've done a lot of traveling over the last kind of, I've done a lot of time in Europe and England, like my first record came out there, so I toured there a lot, and I guess from that I wrote a lot of songs about being in different places.
Even the album art, it's sort of dreary and black and greys, and is that sort of represents your time on the road?
No, it's actually, I kind of figure that the record's got a kind of, it's got a pretty positive light to it as well. I don't think it's all negative, but... the artwork, I mean, yeah, I don't know, I kind of leave that up to other people. I just say, yeah, that looks cool, you know. I just concentrate on the music.
It's cool that you're touring with Beth Orton, who has another great album, and you both sort of are that confessional type of singer-songwriter. Is it harder, do you think, being a man because that genre's been dominated by women for the last 10 years?
Yeah, I guess it has, especially, like, in my time anyway, women have kind of, they seem to own it, which is cool. I don't know, it's kind of good though as well, because I get to play with sort of artists like Beth Orton, I think, you know, I don't mind being a part of that crew.
Like, there's a song here, like Trigger, it was more of a rocking tune.
Mm-hmm.
Do you strip that down when you're live, usually?
No, with the band, it's you know, it's sort of probably more full on, but acoustically it's probably one of the songs I probably wouldn't do, you know what I mean, if it was just me and my guitar by myself. But I got tracks from my first record and stuff and this record, so between there I can make up a pretty good acoustic set, and that's kind of essentially what I'm doing with Beth. But I mean, as I say, I'd really like the opportunity to come in with the band eventually, hopefully later in the year.
As a man, do you think people respond to you differently? Like, how is your audience made up of?
I don't know. It's pretty spread out, my audience. There's no... I can only go from experience in Australia and stuff like that, but I seem to be going down okay with Beth Orton, so I guess sort of similar audience.
Now, you've been constantly touring. I read on your biography. Is that still going? You haven't really stopped since your first album?
No, I haven't stopped for about 9 months, I think.
Like, what's that like? Doesn't it, like, being in a hotel room every single day for a whole year of your life?
Oh, it's really hard sometimes. Sometimes it's cool, like, it's fun at the beginning, and then sort of towards the middle it gets really, I don't know, you miss people and you want to, you know, that sort of side, it's a bit,
painful, but I guess I don't know. It's kind of cool as well. It's one of those. It's sort of the love hate part of the job. Well, probably not the not so good part of the job, being in hotels and not kind of having a sense of home. But you know, it's sort of part of the job, isn't it?
And the assembly line interviews.
It's been pretty relaxed so far. So you know. I'm doing okay.
The Canadians have been treating you good, eh? You didn't produce this yourself.
No, I didn't. I kind of ended up doing a lot of the production in the end. But, yeah, I did some work with Magnus Fiennes, who was more a kind of producer who he put me in contact with lots of cool people and then kind of left me to it, really.
You didn't get to meet Rafe? And
yeah, I did. I met Rafe times in the bar, but his people... terribly exciting. But he was alright.
It's part of the scene, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a scene. That London scene.
of journalism.
It's probably not a big secret that most of this show is pre-recorded. The main reason is because it sounds better. Sound effects and news clips fit together perfectly because we work hard on it. And the other reason is because it's hard to sound alert on Sunday mornings. Regular listeners know that most, if not all, other shows on CKLN are broadcast live. It's more urgent and hosts can respond to breaking news, but usually it just leaves more time for errors. As I have done in the past, I learned to pre-record from experience. What the f*** is going on here? Why isn't the f***ing phone working? Here at CKLN, all of our show's hosts are volunteers. Often only two people, or sometimes just one lonely DJ, hosts the show and works the soundboard simultaneously. Major commercial stations like CBC Radio have bigger staffs and are paid to be perfectionists. Even then, things go wrong. At Pop Journalism, I am the sole production person. I use my own equipment and audio editors to put the show together. Take this segment, for example. The Media Odd Couple of the Week has to be the National's Peter Mansbridge interviewing U2's Bono.
He's known simply as Bono, short in name, long in reputation.
You remember that clip, right? It was in the last Week in Review edition. That 52-second news clip took over 2 hours to make. First, I grabbed audio from the National, which I taped the night before. Then I took that audio, edited out the unimportant parts, or the parts I wasn't going to use. Once I did that, I wrote out a script. Then I recorded my vocals and mixed it with the clips. Voila, 52 seconds of media analysis fun. But it takes a lot of time, and that's just one little clip. Imagine longer interviews like the one I did last week with Catherine Dunphy.
We're joined right now with Catherine Dunphy, author of Morgan Taller, A Difficult Hero, which was nominated for a Governor General Award, and who's also a reporter with the Toronto Star.
Sounds good, right? Well, it wasn't always so slick. You probably have noticed the difference between audio when people call into radio shows and when they're in the studio. There's a big difference. It's because phone audio quality is horrible. I use a filter on my phone to remove hiss for interviews. And I still have to use all kinds of audio software to fix it up. Radio ain't pretty, folks. It's a lot of tedious work sitting by the computer. But that's just the technical stuff. There's a lot of things I edit out for style reasons. Let's go back to my interview with Catherine Dunphy last week.
When did you start as a journalist?
Oh my God, I knew you were going to ask that. I'm trying to think now.
It sounds fine, but I did a little bit of editing.
So, when did you start as a journalist?
Oh my God, I knew you were going to ask that. I'm trying to...
1994?
Yeah, sure.
Kathy was nice about it, but those are the kind of moments you're thankful you're not live on the air, and you can edit it out without anyone knowing about it.
My mom and dad came to Canada in 1951. They started the company with two products and five people. Now we make bar saw, turpentine, face thinner.
Thank you. And it's time to say goodbye. The last song I actually made it was...
I wrote that, yeah.
That's right, Dr. Evil, I made it. We had a great 8-episode run here on CKLN, but it's time for me to move on. I'm going to be hosting a new morning show on CKLN, starting this fall from 6 to 7 in the morning on weekdays. We don't quite have a name for it yet, although I pitched one and they didn't like the idea. So if you're up around the same time on the weekdays, make sure to tune in. It starts on Labor Day, Monday, September 2nd. And it only felt appropriate to close the doors on pop journalism with our most played song. Every week I got a request for this song, and it's pretty new. It's from a British group called Frou Frou. It's called Breathe In. This is my favorite mix of it. It's the Watkins Radio Mix. Our most played song ever. After 8 shows. I'm Robert Valentine. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Can't help but love you, no.